following talk was presented on the 26th of March 2023 and is entitled Spiritual Preparation for Lent with Deb Crichton and Dee Dimmick.
So because of today and because of what's going on today, I thought that, so as many of you know, we have two new licensed Unity candidates, Dee and Deb, who are with us. And part of their licensed Unity teaching is they have to do talks, they have to do classes, they'll have to do workshops, there'll all be all sorts of things that they've got to go through in that journey, of which they will then also be able to share with you guys as they go through the process of that. So because of the fact that we are currently in what's classified as the Lent period, and for those of you that don't know, I'm teaching a class each Sunday afternoon for about an hour on Lent from a Unity perspective. But I thought today it would be kind of interesting to understand Lent and how it is practiced in other faiths, because as we know, Unity's founder, Charles Fillmore and Myrtle Fillmore, but specifically Charles, when looking at the Unity material and putting it forward, explored and investigated the seven major religions at that time. I mean, we've got a lot more now, or there's a lot more that are now available to people than were in the past. But he studied the seven major religions to come up with a lot of the materials and a lot of an understanding of what different aspects of Christianity and the Christian message was applicable and usable within the Unity framework. So I'm going to invite Dee Dimmick up, and she's going to give her talk, which is on the Greek Orthodox Church. Can I just ask those who are online if you could mute yourselves, please?
Did everybody get a handout this morning? Good morning, everyone. Sorry, good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Heather. That'd be great. Okay. There's a little bit there. Thank you. Okay, I better put my eyes on. Okay, I don't know whether many of you have had much to do with Greek Orthodox at all. No, any have any friends or, yeah? Okay, so I was baptized Greek Orthodox many years ago and was married by a Greek Orthodox priest, et cetera, et cetera. And grew up with a lot of the traditions when I was a very small child. My grandmother used to make me kneel on a chair in front of her shrine, and her shrine was on top of the refrigerator. And like, I'm only small now, so you can imagine how little I was as a child, right? And I would do that every day. I would say my prayers every day in front of the icons and Jesus and everything else. And the traditions were very, very strong, and they brought them over here with them. So the older generations were very steeped in tradition, I guess. And it was only as I grew older that it was, you know, that I was seeking more, and I didn't feel like it was giving me that nourishment that I needed. It's still a beautiful, I love the religion, I love the traditions. But yeah, I get my main source of spirituality from Unity. Okay, so one of the things I just want to talk about initially is that the Greek church, the Greek Orthodox Church, was a very, very early church. So it was descended from the apostles when they first started their churches in the Balkans and the Middle East in 1 AD. So it's been around for a very, very, very long time. And in one of the villages that my grandfather's from in Rhodes Island in Greece, in the church there, the church was erected in the 11th century. Since 1066 it was erected. And I went there not too long ago, and the names of the families are engraved in the pews of the church. And the church is so tiny, but it still has all of the, you know, all of the beautiful icon paintwork, and it's just beautiful. And the pews were like, it was just magical to be in there. It really felt amazing. And they would have the family name engraved in the pew. So you go there and see that family name that has been there generation after generation after generation. So those traditions have been passed down through all of those generations, obviously. So a lot, one of the first things that people say is, why is Greek Easter on different dates? The reason being is that they go by a different calendar. So the Julian calendar was designed by Julius Caesar, and it was based on the fact that they thought then that the sun went around the earth, right? And the Gregorian calendar, which was created by Pope Gregory, it fixed some of those glitches and became more accurate when we realised the earth revolved around the sun. So the Gregorian calendar started in 1752 in Great Britain, and the Greeks still go by the Julian calendar. So Easter is always 1 week after, usually 1 week after the rest of us celebrate Easter. Go to slide two, thanks, Julian. So this is the interior of the St. George Greek Orthodox Church in Brisbane, where I was baptised as a little baby. As you can see, there's hand-painted icons everywhere. When you sit down and look up at the ceiling, the entire ceiling is completely covered in icons. So they have all the saints, they have Jesus, they have everyone you could think of. Basically, every child is named after a saint. Okay, so I'm Saint Despina, which is actually Mary, Mother of God, is what they liken that name to. Okay, going back to Easter. So that just gives you a little sort of insight as to what the Greek Orthodox Church looks like inside. Preparations for Easter. So the Greeks do a 40 days. 40 days is very symbolic in Greece. Everything is 40 days. 40 Lent is 40 days, 40 days of Lent. If someone dies, you don't go out of the house for 40 days. If a baby's born, the baby doesn't go out of the house for 40 days. Everything is based around that 40 days. And Easter, Greek Easter in the Orthodox Church, is very, very special. It's one of the biggest celebrations that they have. Obviously, in Greece, they celebrate it a lot longer, and by having a lot of, you know, fair and stuff that goes around the whole celebration of Easter of that 40 days. But here in Australia, they just mainly concentrate on those days before Easter itself, so the Holy Week of Lent. And they prepare for it with, they do a lot of fasting and a lot of praying during those 40 days. And hence why at the end of Lent, there's always a big feast and they eat everything that they weren't allowed to eat for that 40 days. okay, so Palm Sunday commemorates the entrance of Christ into Jerusalem when palm branches were placed in his path before his arrest on Holy Thursday and his crucifixion on Good Friday. It thus makes the beginning of Holy Week and the final week of Lent. Many Greeks, the church service that takes place in the evening of Holy Saturday is the most important one. In the eyes of the church, however, everything is important, obviously. So the next slide the four holy weeks, the important events. Okay. The colour dyeing of the eggs, the colour red to symbolise the blood of Jesus on Easter Thursday. So they dye all the eggs on Easter Thursday, that red, okay. I know these days I think a lot of them have different colours, but red is the main colour that the Greeks do the eggs in. On Good Friday, the epitaphios cloth is decorated with flowers and paraded through the streets, usually in the streets, in the church. Obviously it's in the church. The priest will walk around with that shroud and he will have incense going and he will bless it. God bless. Okay. Then on Easter Saturday, the church service starts at night and at midnight all the lights get turned out. Okay, so the priest actually walks around with a candle and you light your candle off his candle and then at midnight the lights get switched off, okay? Right, so starting with Holy Thursday, that's the next slide. Thanks, Julian. On Holy Thursday, the women traditionally prepare two types of Easter sweets, which is the sweet bread, sukareki, and the sweet biscuits, which is guliaraki. They're quite dry. They're not something that you'd sit down and have afternoon tea with someone with. So it is meant to represent, obviously, the body of Christ. There's also a story that after 2 years after the resurrection, this is one of the stories that the Greeks have. Oh, you can see in that slide too, sorry, before I go on. You can see the red eggs, you can see the epitaphios and the galudia. There's galudia over there, yeah. Yeah. So Mary Magdalene was on her way to Jerusalem carrying a basket full of white eggs when she met with the Roman Emperor Tiberius. Tiberius, however, wanted further confirmation of the resurrection and miracles performed by Christ and said that if the white eggs in Mary's basket turned red, then he would believe. The eggs then turned red and Mary gave one to the emperor and took one for herself, saying, "Christ is risen," to which he replied, "Truly he is risen." So that is one of the things that the Greeks, that's one of the sayings that we always say. We say, Christos Anesti, which is Christ is risen. And then you reply back, Alithos Anesti, which is truly he is risen. Okay. On the morning of Holy Saturday, preparations begin for the next day's Easter feast and dishes are prepared in advance. They make a traditional soup, which I won't tell you what's in it. But it's, yes, now a lot of them just make a vegetable soup after the midnight service, and that's just to break the fast, okay? Right, next slide. Thanks, Julian. And that's actually the soup there. Okay, I'll have the next one. Thanks, Julian. Thank you. Okay, so this is the lambatha. The lambatha are the white candles that are in the church, usually in every celebration, but especially at Easter. And it's, you know, basically, again, another tradition that sometimes godparents give it to their godchildren. So those candles that have been used in the baptism of that child has then been carried on by that child to take to holy traditional services in the church. Okay, so some of them, you see they start off like this and then they get, by the time you get older, you've got this little tiny little white candle that's really tiny because you've used it through all the years. Okay, and it obviously invites everyone to receive the light to glorify Jesus Christ who has risen from the dead. That's the purpose of it. Okay, then at midnight, oh, where am I up to here? I feel like I've missed something here. Okay, so it's Pastor along the congregation. I have missed something there. So at midnight, the lights passed among the congregation until the entire church is aglow. Then the priest reads about the resurrection from the gospel, and a chant is done. The chant is for Christos Anesti, which is Jesus has risen. And as they leave the church, they use that greeting of, you know, Christos Anesti, Aletos Anesti. And Easter always brings with it hope and a chance to start anew, and that's what it's all about for everyone, I believe. So in John 11, 25, 26, Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live, and everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die." Do you believe this?
Yes.
And then in Corinthians, "So it was the resurrection of the dead. What is sown is perishable. What is raised is imperishable. It is sown in dishonor. It is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body. If there is a natural body, there is also a spiritual body." Okay, so the chanting in the church, I did a better slide in there, I don't know. Right, okay. All right, that'll be right at the end, Julian, thank you. The chanting is, it's hard to explain the chanting. There's whole sections just on the chanting and how they do it and the way they do it and the notes that are used and the melodies that are used, and all of it represents something within the religion and the traditions. But the chanting, if you've never experienced it, it's really hard to describe it. It's quite hauntingly beautiful when you sit in this church and these choirs are singing these chants. It's just a beautiful, beautiful sound. And I wanted to share that with you, a little bit of it today, if I can. But it tells you about the mystery of faith and how the church has employed the sacred hymns and the icons of song and verse, and express clearly the truth in our Lord and our Saviour Jesus Christ. Okay. And if Julian can get that happening, I'll leave you with that chant.
Η ζωή εν ταφόν κατετέθης Χριστέ και αγγέλων στρατιέ εξεπλήττοντο συγκατάβασιν δοξάζουσε την σύν. Μεγαλύνομεν σε Ιησού Βασίλευ και τιμώμεν την ταφήν και τα πάθη σου διόν εσώσας ημάς εκ της φθοράς. Ωραίος καλή παραπάντας βρωτούς ως ανίδεος νεκρός καταφαίνεται ότι φύσιν ώρα ίσας του παντός.
So, it's funny. Thank you, Dee. That was brilliant. To be honest with you, yeah, well done. Very proud of you. And you can imagine the history that would be encompassed in listening to that when you're in your traditional faith. You can imagine. And I had a similar minute example of that. I had the fortunate chance to go to Unity Village, and I actually sat in the chapel that Myrtle Fillmore used to do her silent unity prayer vigil in. And I felt this amazing, it was just this amazing energy within that framework that just got hold of me, thinking about the fact that she would sit there in dedication to her faith and to her beliefs and to her understanding of how to practice that from that perspective. So, you know, it was just an amazing experience. It was the whole week I was there was phenomenal, but that was a really poignant part for me where I really got in touch with Myrtle. Often I get in touch with Charles, but I got really in touch with Myrtle and where she was coming from and who she was. So I can imagine for the Greeks, it's quite an amazing experience. I'm going to stop sharing so that you can all see Deb. I mean, you would have seen Deb, but Deb doesn't have any slides. So from another perspective, we've got the lovely Deb Crichton, who's going to join us, and she's going to talk to us this morning about something else.
Hi, everyone. So today, my talk, thank you, Dee, that was absolutely excellent. And mine's going to be on something really different. So part of my heritage is Church of Scotland, like Scottish, Welsh, don't hold any of this against me, Irish. So we've got a bit of a mixed bag happening. So I looked at something really different, and it was the Church of Scotland. You know, the Church of Scotland is their national church. It's Presbyterian. So I didn't grow up in this area, so it's not really my background, but it was a really interesting journey. When I was looking at doing this, I had an image of the Moses basket, and what faith that mum must have had placing her baby in a basket downstream. And it really made me realise that the Church of Scotland is a fruit of the Spirit, just like Unity Metaphysics is a fruit of the Spirit in this basket of faith. So I hope you take the journey and crunch and munch as well on these fruits of the Spirit as much as I did. So Lent begins on the 22nd of February through to the 6th of April. It starts with Ash Wednesday and ends with the Holy Week. It is the story of Jesus's journey with 40 days and nights in the wilderness, and they call it wilderness worship. Now, to be honest, I did have a thing about this wilderness worship. Did they really mean like I had to actually go in the wilderness and worship? Like, what was this, you know, wilderness worship? So I went to our trusty revealing word, and the revealing word says that, you know what, it's just about identifying with things of the Spirit. And I went, oh, I do that all the time. I just call that my spiritual code. I don't call that worship. And then it said it's about having the right mental attitude with God. And I went, yep, I do that. Wipe the sweat off your brow. Worship's not such a foreign word. So I really hope that you enjoy identifying with things of the Spirit through their program. Now, their program's quite structured. They have a three-year revised lectionary period. This is their year A. So every year for 3 years, they have a format that's set, and their prayers are set, their hymns are set, their services are set, and they just vary it slightly in their format. And I found it really quite structured. So my talk is quite structured because their program is very structured. So it starts with their Ash Wednesday. And Ash Wednesday they call a secret journey. And I thought that's very interesting. It marks the beginning of Jesus's journey into the wilderness, a time to rend our hearts, a time in the secret place, and a time to take something up. So what did they really mean when they said a time to rend our hearts? And it was really about a check-in, just like we go and get our car serviced and check that in and get an alignment. This was about a period of time where we align to our relationship with God. A time in the secret place, we're familiar with that term through Unity, and a time to take something up. Well, for them, this was a time about being spirit-led into the wilderness. The first Sunday is a spirit-led journey. That wilderness is not a sign of God's absence. We are led by the Spirit into the wilderness, and that the wilderness is a place of worship and transformation. So let's just ponder that for a moment. Where have you experienced momentous joys in your life? Times where you can have this, you know, you feel like you've got prosperity, everything's going okay. And yet there are times where it feels like the dust storm, you can't see the path ahead. You can't see what's in front of you, and it leaves this bit of a bitter taste in your mouth. So what they do is compare that to your relationship with God. So how does that sit in your life? Like when I went to the New Zealand workshop, there were times where we felt so connected. We had tasks to do, and in one of the tasks, we had to come up with a summary. Now, I came up with the exact same wording as Vicky. Even though we came from two different perspectives, we were very connected in the workshop, and it just felt amazing. But yet, there are other times where we can feel separate from God, separate from our divinity, separate from Spirit, and we're not on that same level of feeling the connection. So this time, this period, is about how you can relate. You know, how does our relationship with God sit with us? So it's about looking at this transformation, about being led by Spirit through this wilderness time. So the second Sunday is the simple journey, and it engages in how Jesus actually went through the wilderness process. And they look at solitude, simplicity, and fasting. So Jesus went into the desert alone. So where in our lives do we show up where we allow this alone time, separate from our daily events? So that gave me something to really think about. How often do I allow myself to sit alone or go somewhere and just contemplate and just build my relationship? The simplicity was something that was really quite interesting. Jesus didn't go into the desert with his gold lame tent and his Ubuque camping mattress from boating, camping and fishing and his, you know, gadgets and things. He went in there and he rejected baggage. And I went, oh my God, if you could see my purse before I leave the door, that is definitely a spirit of fruit that I need to crunch on. So I'm taking that one up. And fasting, when we look at fasting, we talk about food and we go, yes, great, we may not have to eat haggis over Lent, woohoo. And, you know, we give things up. But do we realize that Jesus gave up his identity? Now, that was really something to think about, giving up your identity, that you're not a teacher or a healer or how people associate you, but you've actually gone into the desert to be removed from that. So that was definitely a fruit of the Spirit that I crunched on too. Do I give myself time away from the identity of social media or how other people know me? So have a, you know, ponder on that for yourselves in the wilderness journey. The third Sunday, the sorrowful journey. This is the dangerous desert, learning to lament. Learning the language of lament, Jesus meets us and sends us. Now, the desert was a lawless place. You know, there was criminals, the unknown, danger, failure, fear. And there's times in our lives, I'm sure, where we encounter fear, fear of the unknown. And this in the journey relates to the sorrowful journey part. For me, one of the biggest fruits to munch on was lament. It's not something that I'd really been familiar with. And to be honest, I can't remember a service ever talking about lament or the language of lament. But here they say psalms are honest, raw complaints, protest, distress, called lament. And that this language of lament looks different for each one of us. It could be we whisper a prayer. It could be we listen to a sad song or play a sad song. It could be that we shout at God. It could be that we question our understanding of God. These are all processes of lament, and they're an important part of the sorrowful journey, and perhaps a part that I feel we need to engage more of, or to at least acknowledge. The language of lament often shows up when we're sorrowful in grief, but it can show up at any time that we're part of this journey. And it really brought it home to me because in my world, you know, we now have mental health first aid certificates. We now have mental health as part of our workplace health and safety laws. You go to the doctor, they give you a mental health plan. You know, it's all about go see someone for psychotherapy or a psychologist or somebody else. How often have we actually allowed ourselves the process to lament, to get that raw emotion out and to sit with that and allow that to be spirit-led as part of the wilderness journey? So that was definitely a big piece of the fruit of the spirit for me to munch on. And Jesus meets and sends us. This was about we go into the wilderness for this wilderness worship, which again is identifying things of the spirit, and where God or our divinity shows us something, a message, something that is ours to do. Do we take this up? Are we brave enough to go through the unknown and the fear to take up what is ours to do? Just think of Moses and the bush taking up what it was his to do. The fourth Sunday is the sacrificial journey. Jesus, the man of sorrows, the sacrificial lamb, and sacrifices we are called to make. Now, I've gone, oh my God, sacrifice. That's not such a word that I like in my, you know, dictionary or that I'm comfortable with. But when I looked at it, it wasn't really about sacrificing something up. They're talking about positive sacrifices. The writers of the Hebrews say there are sacrifices we are called to make. Sacrifices of praise, doing good, sharing with others. These are positive sacrifices. So I ask, in your journey through the Lent program, how do positive sacrifices actually show up for you? The fifth Sunday, they go through a truth-speaking journey. This is about the wilderness and exile, power of the prophetic word, speaking God's truth in love, and bringing out that transformation in yourselves. Bring it out in the church, the family, the home. Spirit-led truths, looking at the power of the Holy Spirit in love. How beautiful a time is that? And last in their program is Palm Sunday, and they call that the surprising journey, the fulfillment in Jesus, and living in the in-between. This is about the ending journey, looking back, reflecting, has your perspective changed? What has shifted from the beginning? Can you allow God to work in mysterious ways without having to understand every single part of the process? What was the message that was yours to do? What can you take forth? I really hope that you enjoyed some of these fruits of the spirit as much as I did, and some of the messages they brought about to crunch and munch our way through. For me, it was a different perspective, a different way of looking at this. And I could see some similarities for unity, but for me, it wasn't about comparing. It was about accepting these fruits of the spirit in their own right of faith. And I really took on board that we are spirit-led into the wilderness, we are spirit-led through the wilderness, and we are spirit-led out of the wilderness. Thank you.
Very good. Excellent.
Thank you.
That was excellent.
Thank you. I'm excited about these two. I don't know about you lot. Oh, dear.
It was excellent.
So unity takes on board all of that in a lot of respects. Unity is looking at the metaphysical meaning behind all of that. What is the metaphysical meaning behind all of that? And how does that work in the Lenten process from that perspective? Now, I'm not going to go into it because there's going to be talks about that coming up. The Palm Sunday talk will be, I'll be talking a lot about the whole process of understanding the metaphysics behind the scriptural understanding of that whole process and the week. So I'll talk about that, so come back for more. But I will say that that having gone through Keep a True Lent, which is the book by Charles Fillmore, if you haven't read it, it's available on Truth Unity. It's a really interesting book to understand because on truthunity.net, there is in 1981, somebody ran the class and they told you what to read on each day of the 40 days. And we've been doing, a group of us have been doing the 40 days of that and then catching up on a Sunday. And it's really opened my eyes to understanding what the scriptures and what unity and what the whole focus of Lent really is, which is reconnecting with spirit, letting go of lovingly letting go of those things that no longer serve us. So that's thoughts and feelings, attitudes, beliefs, whatever it is for you, because it's individualized. What I go through in Lent is going to be different from what you go through in Lent, because the universe made us fully divine and fully human. Our fully divine is expressing as me, as Julian. So what Julian's personality needs to let go of during Lent is what Julian's personality needs to let go of. Divine does not need to let go of anything. Divine needs to expand, to build, to grow from that personality of what we let go of. It needs to move forward through and as us. So Lent from a unity perspective is actually quite an important part of our journey on this spiritual path and a spiritual understanding, but you've got to understand it in its fullness, which is understanding the traditions of Lent, understanding the concepts of Lent from different formats, from different understandings, from your own background. What faith did you grow up in? What faith was yours when, and did you do Lent? I grew up in an Anglican church. We didn't do much with Lent except I remember, and you know, I still hear it today, oh great, I've got to give up chocolate, coffee and wine. What about the negative thoughts about yourself? What about the self-defeating attitudes you have about yourself? Let's give those up instead, because they're much more damaging than chocolate, coffee or wine. So those are the things that I learned from doing the Lent process. And I will be doing it again next year, because it's a really important part, I think, of the journey and the feedback I'm getting from the people who are in it. They're getting a lot out of it. So I want to thank the ladies for their talks today. Can everybody just give them a clap? And those online, if you can wave your hands, you're getting bucket loads on here. If this is their first talks, I'm really excited. I don't know about you lot. We're going to be seeing more of them, or we're going to be seeing more talks from them. So I'm really excited about that. So I invite you for the moment just to take a moment to go into the silence, to go into some form of meditation. Take some deep breaths. Breathe in the energy of what we've learnt today, the energy of what we've been presented. Bring that energy of knowledge, understanding, enlightenment, or exposure to new things, new understandings, whatever that is for you. And think about your own spiritual journey, the journey that you've been on from being a very little kid, where you followed what your parents did or you followed what was presented to you, and you've moved through a journey of your own spiritual unfurlment, your own unfoldment into the understandings that you have today. Think about the teachers. Think about the lessons. Think about the books that you've read that have given you aha moments. Think about those books that have given you uh-oh moments. Think about those people that have given you uh-oh moments. Knowing that in every single moment of every single day, spirit is wanting you to unfurl and be the Christ consciousness that is the truth of who you are. And we do this through the process of being in the silence, allowing ourselves that rest time from thought, from feeling, and just be in that space, in the silence. And living, loving spirit, we thank you for the insights, the understanding, the joy of learning new things. The understanding and bringing forth of the Christ consciousness that is everywhere present in, through, and as myself. And in this time of year, I look at letting go, releasing those negative thoughts, those negative feelings, those negative beliefs about myself, the world, and others. And I know that the truth of who I am is the I am. And it is through that truth expressing as me, I change, evolve, and move forward in my spiritual journey. And for this, I'm truly grateful. And so it is.
Where I am, God is. Where I stand, God is standing strong. Where I breathe, God is breathing life in and out and through. Ask me where I see God is, where dance joy lives in my feet, where I live beauty's flow. The faith in me, where I cry, God is the comfort there, God is.
Mm-hmm.